welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, March 10, 2021. Authorities in South Sudan's Central Equatoria State crack down on illegal roadblocks.
There is very many illegal checkpoints on the roads. Each and every day you cannot figure out how many they are in number because some will be working for only 2 days, 3 days.
And police in Jonglei State warn church leaders to respect COVID-19 preventive measures.
You cannot ignore and say the God will protect us. No, it is not a real law. But if there is ignorance, somebody that will ignore, and if he or she resists, police can take the measures against him or against her.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in South Sudan's Central Equatoria State have ordered the removal of all illegal checkpoints across the state to allow the free movement of goods and people. The Central Equatoria State Minister for Information and Communications says there are several unauthorized checkpoints erected by security forces on the roads connecting Juba to the rest of the country. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
Paulina Lukudu Obede, the Central Equatoria State Minister for Information and Communication, says Governor Emmanuel Adil issued the order after state authorities noticed several unauthorized checkpoints were erected along the Juba Yei Road, the Juba Kajukeji Road, and the Juba Terekeka Road. He says the government documented more than 7 illegal checkpoints along Juba Yei Road.
There is very many illegal checkpoints on the roads. Each and every day you cannot figure out how many they are in number because some will be working for only 2 days, 3 days, and they will reduce the number of the checkpoints on that road. At the same time, they also increase. So it depends on the situations.
Obede says when there are several roadblocks, traders will often hike the prices of goods to cover the money they lost on the road, which explains why different counties have different prices of commodities. He says the roadblocks hurt society given most of the population live on less than $10 a day.
Difficult for a common person to live or difficult for a common person to get what actually they want in terms of the basic needs because of the prices and its impact. Because the trader is always working on the profit manner. So whenever there is too many roadblocks, they count it to make it as a profit for their goods and services. So it is the citizen or the common person on the ground who will be paying the price of this.
Colonel Santo Domich, deputy spokesperson for the South Sudan People's Defense Force, says most illegal checkpoints were removed years ago when President Salva Kiir ordered their removal. He says the president has now empowered governors to remove any illegal checkpoints within the states. Domich says most of the illegal checkpoints are set up by the rebel group National Salvation Front and some discontented groups within SPLA-IO, as well as some civilians who use the barricades to loot travelers. He says the military will work with the state officials to remove all illegal checkpoints.
There are those rebel groups that are still outside, and of course we are wearing the same uniform. Sometimes they put a barricade, and of course some people who are not aware of what is happening in the country level it against the SSPDF, which is not the same thing. But however, it is a liability and it is a responsibility of the government of South Sudan, and also as well as the SSPDF as the legitimate force of this government. We'll try to redouble our coordination and our checking, so that to check at different capacities whether such barricades exist. If they exist, of course, we'll have to remove them.
Samuel Siba, spokesperson for National Salvation Front, denies NAS erected any roadblocks in the state.
All these checkpoints are mounted by the SSPDF in the specific locations, and they're using this checkpoint for security purposes, to detect the movement of the civilians, to stop money from the civilians. This is what they've been doing. Not only necessarily in Equatoria, but you go to that side of Brazil. People are talking of hundreds of checkpoints from Juba to northern Brazil. Traders have been complaining along this.
Lampo Gabriel, deputy military spokesperson for SPLA-IO, also denies SPLA-IO mounted any checkpoints in Central Equatoria State. He says SPLA-IO has checkpoints only in their areas of control, which is allowed by the peace agreement.
Like Akobo, yes, there's possibility you'll get checkpoints that when you're entering only, but inside it, you will not even have any checkpoints. Then when you go to the site of Panyume, a central Equatoria that is our control area, yes, you will definitely get checkpoints. But those checkpoints are only meant for security reasons. You will have to be checked to know the reason why you are going, because you are not crossing from the territory, from the government territory, you are going to the opposition territory.
Gabriel says the checkpoints are there to ensure that no soldier crosses in or out with firearms or other illegal items to and from their territory. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
A senior official at South Sudan's National Ministry of Health admits the country faces several challenges in reducing the spread of the coronavirus. Dr. Richard Lino Lako, who heads COVID-19 operations across the country, says limited number of well-equipped laboratories affects the country's capacity to conduct massive testing. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
In an exclusive interview with South Sudan in Focus, Dr. Lako, incident manager for COVID-19 at the Health Ministry, says reluctance by the public to comply with preventive guidelines hinders government efforts to prevent transmission of the virus.
Still, people are not complying unless we, all of us, put that efforts in place and start complying with the measures, and we start seeing things going down.
Dr. Lako says COVID-19 testing occurs in all 10 states, including in Nimle at the South Sudan-Uganda border. He says the government has set up 17 testing sites and installed 5 polymerase chain reaction or PCR machines, which can test a minimum of 500 samples a day. Health Ministry statistics indicate South Sudan so far carried out nearly 118,000 COVID-19 tests, confirmed slightly more than 9,000 positive cases, and registered 102 deaths. This number of tests remains meager compared to global practice. Lako says the National Task Force on COVID-19 is working with security forces to enforce the recently announced additional preventive measures.
The government is also now picked up with the security organs to start doing enforcement to ensure that the orders that have been issued and the resolutions that came out of the task force and the presidency should also be put in practice.
Dr. Lako says the second wave of COVID-19 cases is straining the country's capacity to bring down infection rates. To do that, he says the country needs to acquire more well-equipped testing facilities and border entry points from other countries should be monitored more closely.
The gaps that we have, we are yet to make sure that we establish testing, especially in the border with Ethiopia. Now we are working in Nadapal, but we need to see also in Ethiopia, in Gambela. We want to see also in Sudan, Reng, Awil. We're already working in Abyei, so, but we need to see that also we had some in those places, because these borders, people are crossing. Also in the southern west part of the country with the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Dr. Lako says unless everyone works together to prevent the spread of the pandemic, the situation will not get better.
We're in the middle of it. We have not reached even the peak, and we don't know when we'll start coming down. So we are looking at the data. We're examining them carefully and try to follow the trend and do a lot of analysis and see where the curve is going. If it's continue going up, means we still need, but it start coming down, then we have seen that we have reached a tip of the heartbreak.
Dr. Akwai Cham, an associate professor of public health at the University of Juba, says while South Sudan has limited capacity to control the spread of the virus, the government should make a greater effort to enforce preventive measures.
We don't enforce them, it's the same like doing nothing, because it is not going to work. by just talking or by just telling people that don't do this, don't do that.
Akwai says if the government does not enforce the measures and people do not cooperate, there is not much that can be done to bring down the surge in COVID-19 cases. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still on COVID, police in the Jonglei State Capital Bor are warning religious leaders to adhere to COVID-19 preventive measures or risk stiff penalties. The warning follows a report of continued public gathering, including Sunday services, where some congregants neither wear face masks nor practice social distancing. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Worshippers at the Bor based St. Andrew's Cathedral of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan attended Mass last Sunday as though there was no pandemic. The vast majority of congregants walked in wearing no face mask and made no attempt to distance themselves from others. Bor resident Gabriel Majunga Yuen says, although he knows COVID-19 is real, he continues to attend Sunday services because he believes he must go to church.
The prayers is a spiritual food in our life. No one can stay without taking a meal a day or some days. That is our spiritual need, a prayer.
26-year-old Bor resident John Ngorngong says he stopped attending Sunday services when the National Task Force on COVID-19 announced a partial lockdown more than a month ago, because he wants to protect himself. Ngong says he too believes in God, but wonders why his friends continue to disregard the preventive measures against the deadly virus.
I don't attend church services simply because we already know there is coronavirus in the country and worldwide. So we have to observe the corona protocols. Rules, yeah. It's a routine, especially in Bor.
After the country witnessed a recent surge in COVID-19 cases, the National Task Force on COVID-19 earlier this month issued an order extending the ban on all forms of social gatherings until April 3rd. Bishop James Deng Akir of Makwaj Diocese of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan says he has held Sunday services despite the ban on social gatherings, insisting fellowship is a commandment from Jesus Christ.
We have to fellowship together. We have to come together and worship God. And you know, when two or three and more, when they gather, there is power. And that's, we believe in that, religious leaders and as religious people. So this is the war that we need to fight. Well, it is good for the leadership of the country to protect its citizens, but there are some of the way in which they cannot even manage. Go to our rural areas. Now people are gathering on the borehole. They don't have face masks. They don't have sanitizers, and they are gathering there. You see, they are gathering there, nobody protecting them. In that situation, it is God who can intervene and protect them somehow.
Jonglei State Police spokesperson, Lieutenant Colonel John Maunungang, says police issued several warnings against religious gathering without success. Ngang says religious leaders who violate the COVID-19 protocols will be penalized.
There is saying that you protect yourself and then God can protect you. So we cannot, you cannot ignore and say God will protect us. No, it is not a real law. But if there is ignorance, somebody that will ignore, and if he or she resists, police can take the measures against him or against her.
Ngang says religious leaders should educate their followers on COVID-19 preventive measures. As of Wednesday, the South Sudan recorded 8,305 total cases, 4,217 recoveries, and 97 deaths from COVID-19. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng, reporting in Bor.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, Women in Sudan complain about repressive laws. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
who do you listen to in difficult times and why?
Mostly I listen to my wife and my dad, because these two people, they know me better than anybody.
I listen most to my mom because she's been through a lot. She has a lot of experiences. Anytime I tell her something, she kind of has a solution to the problem.
The person to listen to in difficult times: one, your parents. Two, if you're married, then it should be your partner, because your partner is the person who is there with you every time.
In difficult times, I most of the time listen to my fiancé. When I speak to him, he gives me good advice that helps to calm me down.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. 1 year has passed since the World Health Organization declared COVID-19 a pandemic. VOA's Steve Baragona has a look at what the coming months and years may look like.
After a year of empty streets and full hospitals in much of the U.S., the beginning of the end is in sight.
But I think by the fall, unless there's something very bad with variants that comes along, we're going to see sporting events in person. We're going to see social events, movies, theater, restaurants and bars.
Vaccinations are speeding up. A third vaccine is online from Johnson & Johnson, and a rival company, Merck, will help increase supplies in a deal brokered by President Joe Biden's administration.
We're now on track to have enough vaccine supply for every adult in America by the end of May.
We'll have an oversupply, and I suspect that by the summer, we'll start to be donating our doses to low- and middle-income countries.
Gustin says it's in the interest of wealthy countries to make sure lower-income countries get vaccinated. Dangerous variants can appear anywhere the virus is spreading. They could slow the return to normal. Some are already weakening the vaccines. The shots still look effective, but new variants will keep evolving.
They're essentially a shot across the bow, telling us that this virus is sneaky and it has the ability to evade our defenses.
Another thing that could slow the return to normal? Relaxing control measures too soon, says University of Washington epidemiologist Ali Mokhtad.
We made the same mistake last year, remember, and we have to be very careful right now. We should not repeat the same mistake, especially at a time when we know there are more variants coming up.
And yet, several states are doing just that. Texas Governor Greg Abbott.
All businesses of any type are allowed to open 100%. Also, I am ending the statewide mask mandate.
Biden called the move Neanderthal thinking.
I think it's a big mistake. Look, I hope everybody's realized by now these masks make a difference.
In the long term, the biggest problem may be people who do not trust the vaccines. Surveys say that's about a quarter of Americans, a third of people in six African countries, and 79% in Lebanon, to name a few.
There is deep hesitancy. I think people will get less hesitant as they see this working and they see their neighbors and family members getting vaccinated. But there will be a small group of people who don't want the vaccine.
That sets the stage for flare-ups down the road. Ultimately, COVID-19 may be here to stay, so an annual COVID shot may be too. Experts say that means many more countries need vaccine manufacturing plants, so the world is not stuck again with shots for rich countries while everyone else is left behind. Steve Baragona, VOA News.
Sudanese women are calling on Sudan's transitional government to amend laws and protect women from all forms of gender-based violence. One Sudanese women activist says thousands of women are still fighting policies left by former President Omar al-Bashir. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
As the world commemorates International Women's Day this week, Hala al-Karib, who heads the local NGO Strategic Initiative for Women in the Horn of Africa, or SIHA, says the transitional government has done very little to lift laws and policies that oppress women. Al-Karib says thousands of women across the country are still affected by laws that limit their public participation and deny them equal access to income and resources.
Women are forced to be confined within certain type of jobs, dangerous jobs, you know, spending hours and hours on street vending or selling and brewing alcohol, and then at the same time being punished and persecuted for doing that.
The transitional government lifted the controversial Public Order Act in late November 2019, which described what kind of clothing women could wear in public and placed other restrictions on women. Al-Karib says, despite lifting the law, certain provisions in the Criminal Act are still used against women in Sudan. She says, certain laws left over from al-Bashir administration limit women's participation in public life and deny them access to resources and opportunities.
Very poor laws of succession and inheritance, very poor laws, you know, in terms of women accessing financial resources and supports from the bank. So it's really the same system of Bashir when it comes to women and gender relations. It kept still dictating and controlling women.
Al-Karib says women are still victims of all laws on sexual harassment, rape, domestic and other forms of violence. She says the government has no gender affirmative action policy or laws on sexual harassment that would protect women in the workplace and in public life. She says certain provisions of the country's Personal Status Act also need to be revised to end discrimination against women.
Women who are filing for sexual violence crimes, they could very well be mistaken for committing adultery. Sudan still persecutes adultery to death by hanging or flogging. There is also very ambiguous laws, around profiling women, as prostitutes and all those things.
Al-Karib says the government has turned its back on thousands of women who participated in the revolution, which led to President Bashir's ouster. She says women have yet to see any fruits of the revolution, but they have not given up.
We are going to keep fighting. You know, we have organized protests. We have sent statements. We have, organized meetings with actors from the government, those who accept to talk to us. And by the way, they are not too many, very, very few.
Sudanese Minister of Social Development Ahmed Adam Bakhit says the transitional government has taken steps to empower and strengthen women's participation in public life. He says the government approved standard procedures for addressing and responding to cases of gender-based violence, and he says female genital mutilation is now punishable by law, a move the previous government rejected. Minister Adam says, in accordance to our commitment towards the international protocols, the transitional government has conducted a lot of consultation so as to ratify the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, and the rights of women in Africa are next to the African Charter on Human and People's Rights. He says, we are also soon to approve Violence Against Women Act as the first of its kind in Sudan. Adam says the transitional government is committed to ensuring that women and girls across Sudan are protected by law against all forms of violence. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Still on women affairs, the World Health Organization said on Tuesday nearly 1 in 3 women worldwide are subjected to physical or sexual violence and pervasive crime behavior that has increased during the pandemic. Reuters' Olivia Chan reports.
The organization believes it has gotten worse during the pandemic because lockdowns intensify certain risk factors, such as financial stress and having to live in confined spaces. Claudia Garcia Moreno is the author of WHO study, said to be the largest ever report on the subject.
It's about an estimated 736 and up to 852 million women that are affected. And most of this violence is perpetrated by current or former husbands or partners. This partner violence starts early. So we see that 1 in 4 of the young adolescent girls, aged 15 to 19, 24% of these young girls who have been in a relationship have experienced or been subjected to either physical or sexual violence.
The study analyzed national data and surveys from 2000 to 2018. True figures of criminal violence aimed at women are likely far higher due to underreporting. The UN agency urged governments to prevent violence, improve services for victims, and tackle economic inequalities that often leave women and girls trapped in abusive relationships. WHO officials also said boys should be taught in school about the need for mutual respect in relationships and mutual consent in sex.
We love to hear what you think. Our WhatsApp number is +12026308011. We'll air your comments every Friday. We now leave you with the song "Oh Mama" by Victoria Ole. We have been listening to Victoria Ole with the song "Oh Mama." I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others against COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
shani mabi mutu min ayani ita maindura hazeitenas lakin piroho insania shukran.